I didn't have a joystick. Hello, folks. This is Super Marcy. A little bit confused because this isn't a regular show, so I have to get my brain to function for a different kind of show, because we're not going to, like, really talk about movies so much as we're going to talk about, like, games and stuff. So I needed, like, some people to join me, so please welcome Logan again, because he's, like, a total regular right now.
Hi, everybody.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Marcy. How are you?
I don't know how to respond to that. Well, if you're asking me seriously, I'm sick. If you're asking me really silly, then I'll just be like, I don't know.
Oh, you're sick? Don't worry about it.
How was your sex life, huh?
We should talk about that on the podcast.
No.
We're just going to sit here and play with our joysticks. Because that's what we like to do. All day and all of the night.
Have a joystick.
You don't have a joystick?
I have buttons.
Use your analog stick. Door barrel roll.
I'll press some buttons or something.
Which, speaking of doing a barrel roll, Star Fox 64 is one of the... one of the other guests' favorite games. So should I bring him up?
Yes, completely.
Should I pull up his menu?
Bring him up.
Our third guest, or actually no, not our third guest. The third person who is appearing on this podcast is Harry Arcade Action Jackson.
Arcade Action.
Hey guys.
Hello.
Got an arcade in there? Like, is that my new middle name?
Well, I figured I called you Action Jackson, so I just do it like the double A arcade action.
I liked it.
Arcade.
I was going to give you guys a room earlier talking about joysticks and stuff. I don't know, buttons. And...
Press my buttons.
Somebody presses my buttons.
But then Logan said something about a podcast being about a sex life. I was like, you know, you don't have time for me to get into my very detailed. You know, what are these things? Usually 2 hours, you know, you'd need like 65 episodes for, you know, for me to discuss mine.
Yeah, I need about 1 second, so moving on.
I just hope to play Donkey Kong.
Totally. I mean, okay. So, okay, awkward silence. We're not actually discussing sex lives.
No.
We're going to discuss, like, how much I say like. I'm going to stop doing that. No, really. The idea for the podcast originally was, like, the King of Kong. So we'll just, like, start with that, and then we can progress in any other way that we want, pretty much. So...
I guess that the podcast, just like to circle back a little quickly, I think on the podcast people should just make a drinking game. When everyone says like, they just take a shot.
Yeah, however, I'm not going to be responsible for you having to admit yourself into hospital from alcohol poisoning.
No, that's up to you guys. At your own risk.
Exactly. So, going back to the King of Kong, I'm so trying not to say dong.
yes. A fistful.
A fistful of something. No. Being serious, The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters, is a movie that I'm totally obsessed with. I'm just going to get that out there. So that'll be like our starting point. Yeah. I'd like again.
Yeah.
So I guess really, can we discuss how much of a douche Billy Mitchell is?
I'm kind of on his side. Like, I don't know, not on his side, but I feel like the movie, with its cuts and editing, like, it didn't display him in the best light possible. I mean, he says some pretty outrageous and arrogant things, but I don't think he's as bad a guy as it shows him to be.
No, I think he is.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really do. And I guess if the people listening don't know, The King of Kong is a documentary centering around Donkey Kong and, like, the Donkey Kong world records and how there's this guy who's, like, held the record for a really long time. That's Billy Mitchell. And then this other guy comes along. He's just, like,
he's kind of your everyman.
He's just, like, a regular dude. Yeah. He's, like, you know, he just comes along, like, you know, one day he lost his job, so he gets a Donkey Kong machine. And he needs, like, He needed something to do, so he's like, I'm just going to beat this world record, bitch.
He's like the Peter Parker of Donkey Kong.
So he's just like...
I was thinking Rocky, but...
Well, yeah, underdog sort of thing. Yeah. But he's like there, you're like, I'm going to just like win at Donkey Kong. And he sort of made that his goal, but I think sort of while this all was happening, he kind of got back on his feet and started going back to work and stuff because he was like a teacher, a chemistry teacher or something. Yeah. But, like, he made a video to submit, like, a high score for Donkey Kong because he realized he got the world record. And in the video that he's making...
He's so invested in this game.
In the video he's filming, his kid is, like, telling him to wipe his butt.
Can't I play Donkey Kong? Can't do it right now.
It's really funny. But anyway... So he submits, like,
oh, here, look, Derek, look, I'm going to set the new record. And, like, the kid could not care less.
I'm playing Donkey Kong, wipe my butt! But anyway, he has to submit this tape to get this world record. And there's all this, like, thing about, like, he can't really do it, like, he's got to prove himself. So he goes out and he's like, yeah, I'm going to go to, like, this arcade, blah, 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 and I'm going to, like, set this world record in person. And he does that, but then there's, like, all this sort of controversy with Billy Mitchell because he's all like, I'm the best, I don't know, this guy, blah, 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 blah. And then, like, he's all about setting him in person and that's what the guy, you know, Steve goes and does. But then, like, Billy Mitchell wants to mess around with everyone, so he, like, submits a tape with his high score and then it gets, like, really bitchy. But in the end, like... Steve gets the high score. Although, as of today, I don't think he has it. I think some other new dude actually set a high score back in January or something. But the movie was more about, like, this guy and his story and all these, like, obstacles. And then it's, like, about video games and the weirdos who apparently play them. And I say weirdos because I consider myself a weirdo and I play video games. So I'm not dissing them. That's just how I think of myself. That's how I'm going to think of them as well. So do you guys want to, like, add in your thoughts and opinions on The King of Kong and what I've just said in, like, the worst description of all time?
You covered the bases pretty well.
Well, I hope so. I have to apologize because I am a little bit ill and my head is kind of spinning. So if I don't make sense, that's why.
No, I think you pretty much rocked that synopsis.
Yeah.
I've gone on record to saying it was the best video game movie ever made, and most people think of video game movies as stuff that's based on a video game, not around a video game. But it's just like, there we go, like. It's like you kind of have, you know, you have your protagonist, you have your antagonist, you kind of have this battle between these two men. One's the underdog, one's, you know, he's kind of just like, you know, he's pissed off at life because, you know, he wasn't successful in some things that he did, and you just want to root for him. And like what Harry said,
he's very relatable.
Absolutely,
because I felt like him. I mean, I didn't have a wife or kids, but you know, I've felt the way he's felt, and I've been sitting at home like,
yeah,
I'm gonna get the Super Mario Brothers world record, and I sat there and I played that bitch. But anyway, I'm interrupting.
It's okay. But like what Harry said, and I think it might have, you know, what kind of going along with what he said was they might have portrayed Billy Mitchell to be this like character who's just, you know, very much larger than life, and you know, to kind of make up more of an overwhelming persona, so that way Steve Wiebe kind of came off more as like a fighting champion, like a Rocky type character, as Harry said, to make him seem like he was battling against someone who he couldn't beat, to make the level of attention given to the audience more apparent. Because when I first watched King of Kong and Steve Wiebe won, I was like, you know, I did a silent fist bump. I was like, yeah, for geeks everywhere, yeah. because I was like happy for the guy, because you know he flew all these places. He showed up. He was like, what's up, Walter Day, in your referee shirt and your porn star mustache? Yeah, be Donkey Kong. This guy was like, Billy Mitchell was like, yeah, whatever, man. Good job for you. I'm not even going to show up. I'm going to go make my hot sauce.
Yeah, but I think, like, and this is going on, like, watching something else and sort of finding out more about Billy Mitchell and listening to him in interviews and stuff. Like, he just seems like a very arrogant person to start with. Like, he's very full of himself. And I think that just sort of portrays him as the bad guy. Like, he does have good intentions. Like, you do see a really nice side to him because he goes out and he buys this lady her own, like, arcade machine so she can try and beat the world record and stuff. Like, that stuff there, I mean, that shows him as, you know, that's a really nice gesture and stuff.
I think as a businessman, he's a nice person. I think as a gamer, he's very egotistical because he, you know, and
exactly.
Like, there's that scene where Steve Wiebe's playing and Billy Mitchell passes right by. He's like, I don't want to spend too much time around these people, you know, because I feel like almost as if he has the scores and he's played the games, but at the same time, he doesn't want to associate himself with the geeks, even though I'm surprised we haven't even brought up his name yet. Brian Kuh is like a total geek.
Yes!
We'll get into more of that character later.
Marcy's going to have her climaxes over him shortly.
And then on another note, and I'm saying this like heterosexuality intact, but it just goes to show you how the geeks of the arcade world are supremely, supremely unattractive. And then Steve Wiebe comes out of nowhere like a knight in shining armor because they're like, yeah! Look at him. He's like, well, Marcy will explain.
Well, it's just like very socially awkward people. It shows you a little bit of their lives and, you know, what's the most important thing to them. And it's these high scores and like gathering together in clubhouses and watching tapes of people playing video games.
Yeah, the funny thing about this movie is that these are like the people that I've always been like associated with and like I've, you know, hung out with these people because they were the people that I, like, made friends with because it was just easier to make friends with these people. But it's like when you go to a convention, for example, and it's like you see all these kind of people there. And that's what they are. They're like, you know, it's that dude that stinks.
Which, I mean, it's not a knock against them. They're usually very nice people and they're very passionate about the things that they believe in.
Some of them can be really...
go ahead.
All right, so I've met a lot of people at, like, conventions and stuff, but this one guy, he was a real just jerk, and all his friends were jerks, and they were, like, the exact, like, they looked like the people in this movie, and they were just, like, dicks. But then, like, there was other people, and they were really, really nice. So not all of, like, some of them can be real dicks.
Tell us how you feel, Marcy.
Yeah, well, I am. I'm being quite frank.
Names.
I wish I had their names. I'd report them to the jerk police.
Hygiene police.
Well, no. That's why cons stink. But
I just think people get so knee-deep in their obsession that they almost have to become egotistical. They'll feel like they're better than everyone else because they know that they're in some way, shape, or form not different, but like Harry said, socially awkward. So their egotistical like thing is like, I got the high score on Galaga or Galaga, as they say on Chasing Cars.
Galaga. No, but that's their thing. That's their claim to fame. And I think you see in a lot of their characters or a lot of their narrations that, you know, if you take those high scores away from them, they feel like that's their celebrity. That's what they're known for. And these are scores. Right. Mm. And like these guys, the Twin Galaxies guys and Billy Mitchell and his little like minions, they've held these scores since like the 80s. So for this guy to come out of nowhere.
But they're all, like, in their own little, like, clique. They're in their own little group, and they won't accept anybody else. And it's not like, you know, Billy Mitchell doesn't want to associate himself with these people, because he does. Like, he's BFFs with them. I think it's just, you know, the whole outsider thing as well. And
absolutely. Steve he's trying to break into this Twin Galaxies clique that, you know,
yeah, and Steve Wiebe comes, I mean, he seems like a genuinely very nice guy. And he's not really like these other guys where they're all just, like, very high on themselves and stuff. I mean, some of them don't come off that way, but then they might say something that does make them seem that way. But Steve Wiebe doesn't end up coming off like that at all, and I don't know, maybe he really is. But they had to condense, you know, I don't know how much video footage into, like, an hour
300
and a half,
hours, they
know.
Say.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
But, you know, it's very relatable because, you know, you feel like you've been there where you're somebody trying to break into this very exclusive group and be accepted and you've accomplished things. Yeah. Well, and you've accomplished things in the past and they refuse to acknowledge it, which is what happened to Steve's first score that he said. So, you know, you feel that injustice and you feel for Steve while you're watching it.
The big question is, and it's probably not even the biggest question, it's just so trivial, is why is it a Donkey Kong Jr. cabinet, but it's Donkey Kong on the screen? Because Steve Wiebe has a Donkey Kong Jr. like external cabinet, but the internal game is Donkey Kong. Is it like, I want that
You can interchange the guts of the machine, and that's what they were pulling out those boards, like they're these circuit boards that are on like a piece of plywood, and it's just the inner circuits, and it can go into any... cabinet.
This is where it gets crazy. They're like, oh, I'm going to go to his house, break into his garage, and like check his machine. And it's like, are you serious? Like, go get a life.
And like take very detailed pictures. And, you know, if the gummy substance isn't the same on this picture and in this kit,
yeah, I mean, like who went into his house like that day?
Brian Koo and some other
it's
guy.
Is it Ka or Koo?
No, it's Ka.
It's Ka.
They pronounce it Ka.
That guy.
Yeah. It's like,
if anyone's interested.
If anyone's interested, there's a chick talking about video games right there. Yeah.
Chick? What is that?
which we've noticed in these movies, it's like the female population in the arcades have... And this was only, what, 4 years ago? Things have increased dramatically for female gamers.
Yeah, but, like, you look at the old ones, like, the old footage and then the new footage, and there's all men. There's, like, hardly any women. And when there was a woman in this movie, she was, like, an old lady.
Right. I mean,
it's like, where's the Marcies in this arcade? They're not there. I'm like, I'm going to, like, go and set a record and, like, beat all these dudes.
The thing about Chasing Ghosts, which was... Well, I guess we have to talk about that. It was like more of like a prequel to The Kingdom Come because it kind of explains Mitchell's backstory as well as some other supporting characters from the Twin Galaxies universe. But that was footage taken from like the 80s, whereas Kingdom Kong took place in 2007, but there's still a lack of female personas in the arcade. And you even look back at the cheerleaders, and you're like, yeah, they're okay, because now, like, there's a lot of girl gamers, and they're actually very attractive. And we're sharing one with the podcast right now.
Aw, thank you.
So.
Well, like, they claim they had these groupies in Chasing Ghosts that, like, these girls flock to them and flock to the arcades to watch them play.
Yeah, but I'm looking, and I'm like, there's not many women. And then when there were, they just looked like... Well, I don't know. Some of them I thought were dudes, but I don't know. I know that's mean, but I mean, it's not like they're saying, "Oh, we had these groupies, blah blah." Like they're saying, like rock stars and whatever. But it's like, well,
yeah, but wasn't that the thing in the '80s? Because like the guys looked like women in the rock bands. Like, look at Bon Jovi.
Yeah, I know.
maybe it was vice versa. Maybe the rules were
maybe,
swapped.
But it's like they're talking it up. Like, and then I'm like, but I didn't really see many girls. And I mean, some of the girls were, you know, nice looking.
But the biggest, like, stereotype of the geek was like, oh, look at me. I'm going to get, like, pictures of naked women. And they're not, like, real pictures. They're hand-drawn.
Oh, my God.
Commission.
That guy. Yeah. He's like the guy that, like, all the comic artists dread getting a visit from. He's like the one that's like, can you draw this woman naked for me?
He's like 300... $1,000 worth of these commissions of naked girl art, and you know,
yeah.
Unfortunately, he's living with his cat. He's like living with his parents.
He's living with a fat cat. He lives at home with his parents. He can't even afford
Garfield, yo.
He can't even afford a TV that's like bigger than you know his head, and he's got all this amount of artwork and stuff, and it's so weird.
It's just great because it was like. Naked woman, naked woman, naked woman.
Oh, he's
naked
Highlander. Woman, naked,
and then it's like Highlander.
But the picture he shows is so disturbing. It's like, oh, I just got
the
this.
Only one.
He's like, I got this picture for like $12,000. And you can like turn it upside down and you wouldn't know the difference.
$12,000.
That's like the worst impression ever.
The impression was spot on. I love it.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, so, I don't know. The guys in the movie are, like, they fit the stereotype, but stereotypes, I guess, come about from a place of fact to start with.
It's true.
And, yeah. I mean, I play games, blah, 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 and I know that I've associated with people that are so like the people in this movie. It's why it's so relatable. I think some of them are really extreme, but then you've got, you know, the more normal-ish type with Steve Wiebe.
Right,
you know,
right.
For me, at least that aspect seems very true, whereas some of the other things might have been exaggerated, but that's what was on film. Like, you know, this is what's kind of happened anyway, so I don't think they sort of misportrayed too much, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking, I looked up some of the things that people kind of complained about, and people, I mean, Billy Mitchell and his little posse.
Yeah, it's Billy Mitchell's friends.
Yeah, basically, because you don't just get one. They like come as a wolf pack, if you will. But they said, like, you know, the accusations that it was a break-in to Steve Wiebe's house was exaggerated. They said, like, his mother-in-law invited them in and, like, even gave them quarters to play on his machine, but, like, Steve wasn't home. So, like, this all was going on without his knowledge.
And his wife seemed pretty adamant about what she said. Like, his grandmother probably didn't really know what was going on.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean?
Right, right. And, you know, and then they did start going through his, like, cabinets and stuff and pulling stuff apart. And then, like, Billy says, like, the reason why you don't see him playing Donkey Kong against Steve, because one of the big elements of the film is Steve keeps trying to get Billy to play him head-to-head in Donkey Kong, and Billy keeps kind of dodging him throughout the movie. Billy claims that he hadn't played Donkey Kong for 6 months before the movie was going to be made, so he didn't prep or whatever. That was his
claim
for
that.
You
don't prep, you just go and play, bitch. If you're the best in the world, you do it whenever you freaking are told to.
Yeah, these guys, they're very mechanical in the way that they play. Like, their play styles differ a little bit, but, like, they have, I feel like it'd be really boring to watch them. Because, like, they jump over certain barrels and they'll go backwards and jump over, like, the same barrels again.
Because
it's a very methodical thing.
They don't want to get through the level. They want to score as many points as possible in the level and then move on. And that's their strategy.
And because Donkey Kong has the kill screen at the end,
there's a Donkey Kong kill screen coming up. If anyone wants to see,
if you haven't heard about the kill screen, it's like a very limited. There's a limited amount of levels for them to accumulate a certain amount of points, so they have to get as many points as possible within, you know, a very limited amount of levels. or it'll just end on them.
Yeah, because there's not enough memory on the game, so it goes to the kill screen where you get to halfway through and it just kills you.
Right.
And that's and it's very rare, and that's why Brian Carr was so excited, because he was like, oh my god, I want to, like, get this kill screen.
Right, he beat his pants.
Yeah, I know, and Steve Wiebe's going to get it, and he's just going around to everyone. He goes up to, like, each individual person in the arcade where there's, like, 10 people or something, and he's like, there's a Donkey Kong kill screen coming up if anyone's interested. And he, like, creams himself when he sees it.
And, like, they look at him like, what are you talking about? Because he doesn't explain it, and I guess he just assumes everyone in there is, like, an
they just know. Gamer. He sits and watches Steve Wiebe the whole time, just about. And then he'll, like, call Billy Mitchell and be like, hey, Billy, Steve's getting this many points. And he's, like, still on his first guy.
And then, like, he's giving an interview later when Steve actually, like, gets the kill screen. He's like, you know, I thought I was going to be the first one to get this fun spot.
He's so upset, and he's really, like, he's got this animosity about it. Like, he's really pissed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's Brian Carr.
Brian Carr.
And he has his own t-shirt now.
Yeah, he's got the best t-shirt ever. I really want one. And I'm determined, like, I want to find, like, I want to contact him personally and tell him how much of a fan I am of his work in creaming his pants over kill screens.
Because he was second on the list, so that's why he was so upset, was, you know, to see Steve come out of nowhere and just surpass him like that.
Mm. What were you saying, Logan?
Sorry.
You should tell the audience about your encounter with Steve Wiebe's asking questions and how you didn't get it. Well, you can tell it. Because Steve Wiebe actually has a website.
He has a website. Yeah, he has an official website, and he's got a spot for people to write to him. Like, there's a spot for, like, sort of just contact him, or there's one to, like, say, oh, I'd like you to appear at this thing if you can make it, blah, blah, blah. So I sent him an invitation to come to my house. No, not really. I was like, I have Donkey Kong and Nintendo. Do you want to come play with me? No. But I wrote him a fan letter, and this was like a couple of months ago. I can't remember. Was it a couple of months ago? A month ago? A couple of months ago? I can't remember. It was after Easter, so maybe a month ago. And he still hasn't replied, and I'm like really sad.
Aww.
And I was like, Billy Mitchell is such a bitch.
Silly Mitchell.
Silly Mitchell. And he's like, he Billy Mitchell just, like, goes, and he, like, spends more time on his hair than I do.
Oh, I love the shots. It's in both movies where they show him, like, getting ready in the morning, and, like, he's blow drying his hair. And no, he straps his shoes. They're not ties, right. They're straps.
All right, power laces.
And he, like, his hair, like, he's got the same hairstyle as I do, basically, because he copied me. And he, like, does his hair for, like, 20 hours, and then he's like, I'm going to put on my, like, American tie and my shirt and pants and be all cool and put my leather jacket on.
He uses the brush that Will Ferrell uses in Blades of Glory. Like the horse shampoo.
He totally does.
I cannot love a human baby as much as I love this brush.
But even in both movies, he does come off as very, very arrogant. But at the same time, like, he's friends with Steve Sanders, who was, like, the guy that said he was the best at Donkey Kong when he wasn't. And, like, back in when it was 82, when they sort of all got together and did this, like, photo shoot and article in the magazine and stuff, like, they met, and Billy Mitchell, rightfully so, like, challenged him, as he, you know, he apparently did so back in the day. And he proved that this guy, or he made this guy basically admit that he lied about it, but they somehow ended up becoming, like, BFFs. And even really, like, when they reflect, Billy Mitchell's all, like, smart-ass about it, going, yeah, I, like, did this and that and blah, blah, blah. It's because of me and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, he's, like, your best friend and you're still, like, a jerk. And then Steve Sanders is all, like, oh, he's my best friend, blah, 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 blah. And then he's like, hail Jesus, with all this, like, religiousness.
You got got really religious.
He fully, like, he's like, I'm leaving games to, like, be religious. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, that's fair enough if that works in your life. But he just comes off as kind of creepy. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah, that whole, like, showdown between Steve and, Steve Sanders and Billy Mitchell, it was strange because Steve, like, claimed he had a 3 million point score and it just got accepted. Like, where was the verification back in the day?
Yeah, they didn't, because it was so new and they didn't really know what to do. So, somebody's breathing heavily right now.
I'm just getting so excited about talking about video games. I'm
you're
so
just
sorry.
Like, you're like Brian Kern. You're like,
if anyone's interested, there's some heavy breathing going on right now.
If anyone's interested, there's some heavy breathing going on right now.
Video games, yeah.
Sorry, I just saw the new T-Fury and I just, like, have to change my pants. It's very sexy. If anyone wants to know, it's, like, a Harry Potter-related T-shirt. Anyway.
Oh, but by the time they listen to it, it's probably gone.
Yeah, well, it will be gone. Sure. Oh, my God, it's, like, a Hufflepuff-colored T-shirt. I should buy it, because apparently I'm, like, Hufflepuff. Stupid tests.
Black and yellow, black and yellow. Anyway.
Oh, man.
Let's move on, kid.
Let's move on. There's, like, a kill screen coming up. Sorry.
Have we already discussed Mr. Awesome? And
no. Really oh, no. where do we even start with this guy?
Mr. Awesome looks like he could be a professional wrestler just based on name alone. And he's basically this guy who just dresses up in, like... Just, I guess it's like a mock police outfit or like an army outfit.
I don't know. He's got like a policeman's hat. It looks. Oh no, it's a stripper's outfit. That makes
sense.
Like
gloves.
Yeah, it's like what someone would wear to do it, like a male strip show.
YMCA, village people.
Exactly.
Mock up. But anyway, this guy, he apparently set a record in Missile Command, which is, you know, one of those 80s games. And he his record is kind of controversial. Like, I don't know why, but Twin Galaxies refused to accept it. And it started this big fight between him and Walter Day, who's the head referee and all that stuff. So ever since then, he kind of felt slighted, like he never got the recognition he deserved. So he started this comic book of his life, and they show photos of it, and it's just this, just these naked pictures of him and this girl, and he says
that
it's the most.
He
says it's the most important literary accomplishment in history, in American history.
He freaks me out, but
he also claims Arnold Schwarzenegger made his millions as a drug dealer and a prostitute.
Well.
So he's probably going around with the recent news and saying, told you so. Told
exactly.
You
so. But, like, a lot of the kind of controversy that happened with Steve Wiebe was, like, that this dude, was his name Roy Schultz?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he, like, somehow was in contact with Steve, and Steve wasn't aware of any of this rivalry stuff. But then they're like, oh, this guy's, like, affiliating himself with this guy, blah, 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 and it's like, he didn't even really know anything about it, and it was just like that kind of fucked him up a little bit. Because
this guy is so sad too.
Yeah,
he's
but
just really pathetic.
Yeah, he looks like one of those guys that just like he hasn't accepted that he's not like, I can't even explain it. It's not easy.
He
never became the celebrity that some of these other guys did, and it's like he's still holding on to it. He's not letting it go. He's not letting this Mr. Awesome thing go. He's still full Mr. Awesome uniform for the movie, and he still hates Billy Mitchell and the guys that kind of got the fame and recognition that he felt like he deserved. He said he wanted to be on The Tonight Show. He was so angry that there were animals on The Tonight Show, and he was never invited. And it was like, that would happen. You know, Jay Leno would just invite you onto The Tonight Show and show your comic book, you know?
This is like the blue disc guy of Twin Galaxies. Sorry, that's an MFC reference for those of you who won't get it. It's an inside joke, I apologize.
Oh, no.
I hope he doesn't listen to this. Actually, I kind of hope he does. He's going to be like, who the fuck is this Logan guy? Anyway, moving on.
But yeah, so Steve's association with Roy Schilt kind of hurts him in the King of Kong because they think that this is Roy Schilt's master plan to get back at Twin Galaxies and bring down the organization and whatnot. And so they basically invalidate Steve's record, which was, it was a pretty significant record because it was the first time anybody had scored over 1 million points in Donkey Kong. So, you know, it was kind of like really questionable as to why they rejected Steve's score.
Yeah, I think he had a lot to do with it, and because they sort of, like, now I'm saying it like, again. Because of they sort of, he gave him, like, better boards and stuff, and they were like, oh, no, this might not be legitimate because he, like, swapped boards with this guy. And it's like, oh, my God, are you serious? Like, are you that insane? Yeah, apparently they are that insane.
I wouldn't want to swap boards with Roy Schilt.
I wouldn't want anything to do with him.
Sounds dirty.
Apparently.
I don't use protection, yeah.
So another one of my favorites characters in Chasing Ghosts was Todd Phillips, who was the spider guy.
Oh my god. No.
He's, like, living in Florida, I think, in, like, this one room building, and,
It looks like a trailer or something.
Yeah, it looks really pathetic, and it's just, like, he's another one where it just seems like the 80s were his better days, and, he had all these endorsements when he was a kid. He was endorsing joysticks and games and stuff, and they interviewed him, and he's like, oh, I'm gonna make games when I get older, and this and that, and he just never took off, like, he became this guy who just kind of sits in this little room. He collects all these spiders in his closet, which are like really scary. His introduction video is him talking about a spider that's eating a squirrel.
Awkward pause city. Go, no, you go first.
Throughout the film, he, like, lists this laundry list of things that happened to him. Like, he lost his wife to an overdose. Yeah. He's, like, he was paying a mortgage for all these people. His dog got run over. His brother died. Like, he's just, I don't know. You kind of feel bad.
I mean, what I noticed from the film, and it might have just been due to stress levels from all those things that you just mentioned, but, like, if you look at him back in the early 80s and where he is now, he completely let himself go, like, physically.
Yeah.
And a lot of the things I noticed too, like, because I was watching it last night, I was like, where did their hair go? Because all these guys had, like pretty good sets of hair, and all of a sudden you just see them in the present day or the near present day, because it was like 4 years ago, and like all their hairlines are receding.
Except for Billy Mitchell, who still has the mullet.
Yeah, but he's rocking a mullet in 2007. Gotta give the guy props for that.
Short in the front, party in the back?
Yeah, when I go to Florida, I just want to eat at one of his restaurants.
Oh my gosh, I so want to do that. I want to go there and be like, I demand to see Billy Mitchell.
Ricky's in Hollywood, Florida.
Definitely, I'm going, I don't care. I don't care, like, if I have to steal some of the airline tickets, I'm freaking going. I want to do that.
Well, it's funny, they were, everybody was recently in New Jersey. Billy Mitchell, Steve Wiebe, I think Steve Sanders. They had a big Kong-off. Hank Chen, who's the guy who has the record currently, and it was kind of like half for charity and half to see, like, if there's still an interest in this kind of thing. And basically for 2 days, all the players set up 10 Donkey Kong machines right next to each other, and they played, and people could come into the arcade and watch and cheer and whatnot, and nobody set any new records, but Hank Chen, who is the current record holder, he ended up winning the entire event by setting a, like, a 900,000 point score. But it was really cool.
When did this happen, and why wasn't I invited?
It happened, I think, in March sometime. And
no,
I think it
was towards the end of February, Harry.
February? Yeah. Because I told Logan about it because he lives pretty close by.
Yeah. I guess there was just, for some reason, I could not go. It was like a $30 per ticket, and it was like at this place in Flemington, New New Jersey, which is probably like 45 minutes away from my house. But for some odd reason or another, I just couldn't go. And Harry was actually like, we both live in the state of New Jersey. So we were like, you know, and for one reason or another, we couldn't go.
Right.
I couldn't imagine being in anything other than walking to this big arcade and just the body odor stench.
That's why you wear a mask.
Just hitting you at like the forefront of, oh my god, here it is, it's the real deal.
Was Brian Carr there?
No.
I don't think so.
Damn it.
I don't know what happened to this guy. He like dropped off the face of the earth once the movie.
I wanna track him down.
Where are they now?
Yeah, I'm gonna track him down, but I mean if I was at this event. If I was
he
at this event,
a file on MSC,
he's blue disc guy. If I went to this event, I would have probably kidnapped Steve Wiebe. Just saying.
But like Billy Mitchell is the one that organized the event, so like I think there is a, if not a friendship between the two, it's probably not to that level.
Respect.
But there's a respect, and movie has been successful for both of these men. Like even though Billy Mitchell is like portrayed as the villain, whatever, he's got free advertising for his restaurant, free advertising for his hot sauce.
Mm-hmm.
He just opened a King of Kong arcade in the Florida airport. If you're in the area, go and check that out. But, you know, both men are enjoying some success from this film.
Mm.
Actually, I heard that there's going to be some sort of a follow-up slash possibly a adaptation of the battle between the two, like another film. That was on Wikipedia.
There was supposed to be like some kind of film adaptation.
Yeah, there is. It's starring me as every single character.
And Ben Stiller as Billy Mitchell.
That picture is priceless.
But when I first saw King of Kong, I was just like, I was completely blown away. Like, I was like, because there's a lot of movies that I will watch. I mean, documentaries are a genre of film that I really haven't gotten into, but I was like, it's Donkey Kong, Logan. Like, what are you going to do? Like, not watch it? Like, it's a video game film. And I was just completely blown away at how, like, well-paced it was. Mm-hmm. How, you know, because, I mean, we keep talking about this movie, Chasing Ghosts, and we kind of really have explained it. It basically just takes all these people that have all these world records and kind of, exposition on each person, and you know, basically we learn about these people and how their lives are, you know, currently. Where King of Kong is more of just a straight up battle between two men for a championship. But I feel like I watched Chasing Ghosts last night, and I think that I prefer King of Kong only of its pacing and its setup.
Right.
It's
right.
A bit more interesting, and the characters aren't as sad. Like the Chasing Ghosts, it's more about like back in 82 when they did this photo with all like the world record holders, and it follows like these guys and what they're doing now. I mean, some of them didn't really do anything. Other guys, you know, they're fair enough, their jobs, families, whatever. But it's, I mean, some of it's kind of sad, some of it's kind of not, some of it just makes you feel really normal, and then some of it's like, wow, the guy with his naked lady picture collection is freaking me out.
If Chasing Ghosts does anything, if you look at your life and you're like, oh man, I feel like I'm a really bad geek, just look at these people.
Oh, and Chasing Ghosts knows that it's doing that too. Like it's like a film where it's laughing at them more often than it's laughing with them. And like you kind of feel bad as a viewer for doing it, because I'm sure none of these people had the idea that they were going to be portrayed in this way while they were making the movie. But, you know, it's just the way that Chasing Ghosts is presented. And an example, they go to this guy who has all the spiders. They go to his trailer, and he's got Christmas decorations up, and they're playing Christmas music, whatever. They're showing his decorations, and then a subtitle comes up, July. So he's left these Christmas decorations up, you know, since July, or he's celebrating Christmas in July or something.
I'm actually looking at Wikipedia right now for the King of Kong, and somebody said, for the Washington Post, said, is there anything more tiresome than watching people play video games? You know what?
Shut up.
Yeah, the competition is so vicious because the stakes are so low.
Well, these people are stupid.
But this is the thing. Like, we know these people, Billy Mitchell, Steve Wiebe, because we've all played Nintendo, we've all played Donkey Kong in some way, shape, or form or another, and we consider these people like celebrities because, you know, they... And if, I understand it's a video game, but those games are... I mean, I've never actually played a Donkey Kong cabinet, but apparently, according to these films, it is a very, very difficult game to beat, and it requires a lot of skill, a lot of hand-eye coordination, so... As much as I'm trying to play up the whole video game schematic, it's really like people have to give it, like, you know, it's a, they have to run the gauntlet, so to speak. And I'm probably sounding all geeky, like, I'm so tough to beat Donkey Kong. But
you're,
I
mean, just like,
yeah.
What was that quote from Billy Mitchell? I can't remember. I've got to, like, look it up. When he's like, people who don't do something play video games or something.
I can't remember. The quote that comes to mind listening to Logan was when I think Walter Day, the referee, is like, to set a higher score in an old game, you know, even like 10 points higher, 100 points higher, you've got to go home and like practice and memorize like all the patterns. And, you know, it's not very easy to set these new high scores. You know, it requires an extra jump here and, you know, hopefully this fireball doesn't come out there. It's very random.
Mm. And the quote was, work is for people who can't play video games. That's kind of
funny. I wish I lived on that world.
Yeah, I wish I could just, like, you know, work and play video. Like, my work would be playing video games all day and I just got paid money. That would be, like, the best job ever. I mean, if such a job exists, I need to go look for it.
And I guess for a lot of people, you know, they have their movies, they have their music. But for these people, like, their form of escapism is going to an arcade, you know, putting in a quarter and just like, all right, let's see what I can do today, kind of thing. So, I mean, that's their life. And you know, for some people, it's paid off more than others. Like, Billy Mitchell is highly successful, and he's got a wife who looks, like, fake as hell. But
he paid for all their surgery, apparently.
And then there's
Mom,
people like,
when did you get so big?
Two Back to the Future references in one podcast. High five. And both from the same movie. But, you know, whereas other people, it's like we see Billy Mitchell, who's like a very successful entrepreneur. And there's other people who have, like, these video games have completely just destroyed their life because that's all they focus on. Mm. And it just kind of shows you the two sides of being a geek, or, well, a highly accomplished geek versus a person who's just gotten completely absorbed in this, you know, this form of media. You know, thankfully, all three of us are not in the latter part of it.
No.
Where it's like, oh, yeah, video games, you know. Because it's like the one guy on King of Kong, he's like, I don't do drugs, I don't drink, I play video games, which is a more dangerous habit than any of those two. And it's like, it's true, because it could completely take away all the hours of your life if you let it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So.
Lately.
There you go.
With that said, I love video games.
Yeah.
What game, if you could set a record and like take the time, take the 30 hours, the practice, all that stuff, whatever... What game would you want to set a world record on?
For me?
Yeah.
I would say Super Mario Brothers, the first one, or Super Mario Brothers 3, or Super Mario World, because I'm a Super Mario kind of person. Because I've tried to play Donkey Kong on my Nintendo, and it is really hard, and I don't think I'd really be able to sit there and play that for that long. Super Mario? Yes, I probably could take the time to get all the points and, you know, do each and every level and accomplish that.
I've watched, like, for Mario, some of the speed runs, and they're just like, they play the entire Super Mario 1 in like 6 minutes. And
what was my record? 20 minutes? Don't want to brag. Twice in 40 minutes.
Which is very impressive. It's impressive.
But there's these people on YouTube who have, like, they do Super Mario Bros. 3, and they just hop, and when they hit the ground, they hit a Goomba, and then they just hop up again, and then when they drop down again, they hit Goomba.
Some of that's got to be cheating. Like, it doesn't look real.
I don't know.
To me, it doesn't look real.
I mean, if I was to, like, be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to set a Super Mario Bros. 3, like, speed run, I'd just pop in my Game Genie and then put on the Skywalker mode and be like, all right, what up, bitches? Just flat over this whole level.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like some of the challenges in validating recent scores is that you have all these people that like download the emulator on their computer or whatever, and it's not the same.
No,
it's not
because
playing the game, it's not, you know, with the controllers.
I'd sit and play it like on my actual Nintendo, and I would just sit and play Super Mario, and I would like, I mean, if it was based on points, I would sit and get all the freaking points, touch everything on that level and get the points. Like, I mean, if they wanted me to say, oh, you got to finish it on, like, three men or something, I would be able to do that. And I would sit there and practice so that I would not lose my free man. And, yes, I call them free men.
Your guy. I was on my second guy.
Yeah, he calls them guys. I call them free men. Maybe secretly I want to not pay for my men. I don't know.
I like them cheap.
Cheap and nasty, but...
How about you, Logan? What records would you set?
Well, as coming from someone who's actually never beaten the game, emulator, Nintendo, I would really like to set a speed record on Punch-Out. Actually, no, let me rephrase. I would like to set a speed record on Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. None of this Mr. Dream bullshit. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out are bust. When I downloaded the game for my Wii, I was just like, I don't want this. I don't want this guy.
It's,
have to use it's your like, hand? It's like a 3-3 Patrick.
Had to, sorry.
But I've seen people on, you know, YouTube. I mean, that's where the real, like, the talent is. Because you're like, you know, when you go on YouTube, you're just like, oh, who's done, like, Through the Fire and Flames on Guitar Hero? Like, expert 100%. Are their fingers off their, like, did their fingers fall off their hands? No? Okay, then it's not real. But... You know, that's a game that, to this day, like, I could probably, because I'm trying to remember the order of the boxers. I think it was Super Macho Man, then Mr. Sandman, then Tyson. And for, Sandman I could never get past. And it usually, unless I was lucky. And then I remember playing it back in the day with my brother, and he got up to Tyson, and he just, like, I remember him literally being like, what the hell just happened? You know, because it's like, you are literally, you have to have, like, for people who say that, like, video games are, like, a waste of time, they're probably right, but...
No, you know what I say to them?
No, but, like, I would say to this person, like, look, here's a Nintendo controller, fight your way all the way up to Mike Tyson, and then try to beat him. And that was the beauty of that game. It was just so, like, it was a puzzle boxer, which it was not like your typical boxing game. So, like, you had to rely on your senses and your intelligence. And they don't really make games like that anymore. Even as Punch-Out as simplistic as it was, and I'm praising this game because I love it to death, but if I had any record to be able to set, it would be Punch-Out. Mike Tyson, Punch-Out. Done. So, on to Arcade Action Jackson.
I was just thinking, there's a record that I found out about recently because it's just been set. It's like the longest longest fighting game marathon playthrough, and it's these guys for Game Informer, the website or the magazine, one of them, and they sat down and they played Super Smash Brothers Melee they played Brawl on the Wii for 30 hours straight, and I think that that's a beatable record. Like, I loved playing Super Smash Brothers Melee more than Brawl on the GameCube. And to sit there and play for 30 hours, I feel like I've done that at one point in time, and it just never verified.
It might have been 30 hours, but it was probably, like, over a span of a week or something. This is like, you got to sit and play it for 30 hours. Like, you got to shit in a bucket if you're going to sit and play that. You can't stop.
Well, no. The rules of Guinness... The rules of Guinness give them 10 minutes breaks for every hour that they accumulate.
Just that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, you 10 get 10 minutes? Minutes, and so, like...
No, it doesn't work like that.
And that time still counts as part of the 30 hours.
Nah, that's bullshit. You gotta, like, sit there and have, you know, a 5-minute break every 3 hours. That's hardcore.
Like, some of these old games where you had to, like, accumulate lives And then when you go to run to the bathroom, like, your lives are dying off. So you have to, like, hurry up and come back.
That's why I said you just shit in a bucket if you got to go to the toilet.
Well, it'd be kind of awkward because you have to have witnesses and, like, you know, it's going to be on tape.
Well, you can, like, cover up and just be like, excuse me, I just want to turn around for a minute.
Gives a whole, yeah. Gives a new literal meaning to Game & Watch.
Game & Over.
I will totally stop being disgusting. It's just like, it reminds me of the South Park episode, The World of Warcraft, where they just shit in a bucket. Like, Cartman calls his mom to go bring a bucket. And they just sit there and get fat.
Well, I mean, the sad thing about that is that stuff happens. Like, there's people that, like, sit there and, like, die because they just don't get any nutrition. They sit on the game and their computers all day. And
yeah, it's a very harsh addiction. Like, you need to, I mean, I'd say healthy, you know, if you do a few hours a day, but, like, at least go have some food, shower, go for a run after.
I don't know about, like, the score set. Like, the score, high score records, you know, require a lot of skill and, like, you have to have practice. And, like, I don't know if I have the time to put that in, but if I can sit on my butt for 30 continuous hours and play a game and get a record for it, I think I can do that.
All right. I want to see what the record is for some of these things, but Twin Galaxies has the worst website navigation system in the history of websites. I don't know how to use it.
I have a brief history here of what's happened to the Donkey Kong record since the movie came out, if you want me to go over that.
Well, yeah, you can if you've got it there.
Yeah. Well, these are all from Wikipedia, so I don't know how reputable they are.
Sorry.
But at the end of the movie, Steve Wiebe sets the record of 1,049,000 in his garage, so that's what it ends on.
Mm-hmm.
And then not too long after that, to celebrate the release of the film, Billy Mitchell set a record of 1,050,000. And then, inspired by the film, which is why I kind of ask you guys, like, what record would you go for? A New York plastic surgeon named Hank Chen, he enjoyed the film so much that in February of 2010, he set the new record of 1,061,700 points. So, like, here's a guy who has a life outside of gaming. He didn't grow up, you know, in the 80s playing it. He just saw this movie, thought it was cool, and decided to sit down and break this record, which I think is really cool. Mm. That record would stand until August, when Billy Mitchell took it back at 1,062,000. Then Steve Wiebe came up, and he beat it in September with the score of 1,064,000. And then in January, Hank Chen took it back, January of this year, with a score of 1,068,000. So that's where it stands now.
Mm.
Which, there's plenty of material if they want to make a sequel. I mean, this record's kind of, there's been four different people that, you know, four different records in the last year. So.
Marcy actually just sent me this link to this movie called Frag. And it came out in 2008. It's 88 minutes long. It's another documentary, and it features Billy Mitchell and Steve Sanders. Might be worth checking out, guys.
I'll track it down.
I have never seen Frag. I've seen another gaming documentary about a guy in Oregon. It's called High Score. I mean, this guy's name's like Bill Compton or something, and he's trying to set this high score on this
Mitchell
like command.
True Blood. Bill Compton.
Yeah. I think that's his name. Maybe that's where it came. I don't know. Look it up. Look it up.
I'm totally looking up. Was it called High Score?
High Score, yeah, that's the name of the movie. But basically, whatever this guy's name is, the vampire of True Blood, apparently, decides that he wants to set the high score for Missile Command, and he realizes that in order to do that, it would take 56 hours. And so he goes out and he buys a machine, and he's doing it on the weekends, and, like, they're showing his life and everything. And the problem is, his machine, every time he sits down to do it, it keeps resetting on him. So, like, he gets to, like, 12 hours in resets, 14 hours in resets. He finally gets to, like, I don't know, 18 hours, I think, was the highest he got, and his machine reset. And, like, that was the end of the movie. And you feel so bad for this guy. that he just couldn't get a machine. And you're like, why can't the filmmakers just get this guy a working machine? But it's like,
because Roy Scheeld, like, cursed them all.
And, like, that's what I was confused, because I thought Roy Scheeld had the record, but, like, his record was something different, and this guy was going
for,
like,
they never accepted his thing.
Yeah.
Like, his score ever.
Yeah. So, so you're kind of rooting for this guy, but in the end, you never find out if he did it, and, like, you know, you start to look these people up, and, like, you kind of get invested in it. Like, you want to know what the state of the high score is, and, like, I think the last thing I read about this guy was he was at a gaming event and he was on pace to break the record, and he went to the bathroom and he lost all his men. And that was it. So, sad story.
But, yeah, well, I found
a bad day.
And the guy's Bill Colton, not Bill Compton.
Okay, well, close enough. I
love the tagline, 1 quarter, 2 days, no pause button.
This ain't no game, it's a live-action thrill ride. Anybody know what movie that's from?
Mario Brothers.
Absolutely.
We should move on to that. We should just talk about that.
Have you seen it, Marcy?
What, Super Mario Brothers?
The live-action one?
As in Bob Hoskins?
Yes.
Of course.
As in Eddie Valiant as Super Mario.
Basically.
Sorry, I didn't have my of course soundbite, but of course. Yes, I have. And
so for those who haven't seen it, in 1993, I think the film company Hollywood Pictures and Allied Filmmakers, I believe, they're all out of business now, mainly because they decided to make a live-action adaptation of the Super Mario Brothers series, which by that point I believe they were up to Super Mario World. And
because Yoshi's in the movie.
Yeah, because Yoshi's in it. So they had never made a video game movie before, and so this was their first crack at it, and most people say that it was pretty bad. But I liked it.
Yeah, I guess it works in a nostalgic sort of way for me, because even though it's just kind of it's not really as good as the source material. I mean, it's not that close to the source material as it could be. It basically also did us a favor by preventing any Nintendo property from being made, because, you know, in the realm of the in the realm of the video game movies that have been out there, I could probably count on one hand the one that were actually, like, more worthwhile than others, and I think the only one that I can really think of is the first Mortal Kombat, which is weird, because Mortal Kombat as a property of video games is something I never really got into. I was more, you know, into Street Fighter, the Capcom fighters, you know, Marvel vs. Capcom, all those.
Right.
But as far as, like, the video game movies, Mortal Kombat, the original one, not the second one, because the second one...
The second one doesn't exist. Shut up.
Yeah. Like, and told. You know, the first one was, you know, for what it was pretty good. There's still a big part of me that wants to see a Legend of Zelda movie directed by Peter Jackson. But that's just me, and maybe one day, but I doubt it. So like I said, you know, thankfully Super Mario Brothers kind of made Nintendo look at their products. But maybe like one day, like Nintendo will be like Marvel and they'll make their own movies, which would be pretty sweet.
That would be pretty awesome.
I mean, as far as Super Mario Bros. Goes, and I've like discussed this many, many times in podcasts, because it always, the movie just will never die. It always comes up. It is like, as a kid, I loved it, but I didn't know any better as a kid. And then when you look at it as an adult, you're like, what the hell is this? But it's kind of like, it's so bad that it's just hilarious. And there's so many things that are so wrong with that movie.
And it's the like, mud.
It's, I mean, I like looking back and it's like, what the hell? Like, they don't look like Mario or Luigi.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like somebody gave them a book and was like, here, you know, make a movie off of this book. You can start on page 1, whatever. And they're like, fuck your book. Like, I just, like, ripped it in half and started, like, burning pages and just,
I mean, you know, I can understand if you're going to do it and be like, all right, we're going to do our own thing and sort of base it off this, but not be that faithful, but this is just dumb. Right. Like, it's completely dumb.
I mean, it's really, like, just goes to show you how the live-action segments of the cartoon were 10 times better than the movie itself.
Well, at least on, like, the show, what was it? The Super
Mario Brothers Super Show.
Yeah, I was going to, like, totally not say that properly. I mean, at least you had, like, what's his name? Captain Lou Albano.
Captain Lou.
Peace.
Here's a Mario.
Oh, please don't. I'll be singing that all day.
Start singing your arms from side to side.
Shut up.
Luigi, I'm home.
I mean, that show, like, it wasn't the best, but I was too excited to, like, watch it every weekend.
Yeah.
Right, when it was on TV.
That was, you know, like, that was the backbone of my childhood right there. Like, a big piece of my childhood. And I bought the first volume on DVD, and it doesn't hold up. Actually, to its credit, the live-action segments still hold up rather well. It's the cartoon that kind of, like, pales in comparison. But none of that stuff from your childhood really doesn't match up to what, you know, your adult, like, life. Because you remember it differently.
Yeah, let me get back to what I was trying to say. Wasn't, like, the show more sort of concentrated on things from, like, Mario 2? Or am I making
that
up in my head?
Yeah, because they were all together, like, like, the four of them were always, you know, fighting against Bowser, and Wart was getting no respect. Like, poor Wart.
Yeah. Wart disappeared, but they used all the bad guys from Super Mario 2.
Yeah, it's true. Like, the Bomb showed up, the Shy Guy showed up. Like, they're all in the later games.
Birdo.
But all of a sudden, yeah, Birdo, who was apparently a male, but whatever. Well,
there was this thing on IGN the other day. I don't want to side note too much, but, like, they were talking about how Yoshi and Birdo could be, like, a gay couple for Nintendo because Birdo is a guy and Yoshi's a guy, and, like, they're always paired together, and it made a lot of people really upset.
Well, no, but apparently Yoshi's a girl because Yoshi lays eggs.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Harry paused for a second. I was like, did I blow your mind there a second, dude?
Well, no, I was just about to make a bad joke about Yoshi's tongue and being a girl. But anyway.
Yeah, but Birdo's got, like, that big mouth. So
well,
moving on.
Maybe they're both hermaphrodites.
Maybe. Which is fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but it made a lot of people upset.
I was thinking about it today. It was like, is Super Mario Brothers 2 a precursor to Inception? Like, because he's dreaming.
Yeah.
And, like, his subconscious, and they're all in the dream, and they're all working together to, like, stop Wart, who doesn't show up again. So that's what I want to see. I want to see Leonardo DiCaprio in a Luigi outfit. Make it happen on Hollywood. And
Inception 2.
Yeah. Because I actually posted a picture on MFC where it's like Super Mario Brothers 2, but it's in the Inception font.
Nice.
But somebody I had read somewhere, like, wouldn't it be awesome if Pixar did a Super Mario Brothers, like, movie?
Yeah, but then you'd be, like, crying the whole time.
Yeah, like, somebody would...
It'd be like,
Luigi's gonna die.
No, we have to hold hands and do it together.
It'd be headed for a fire pit.
Yeah,
it'd
exactly.
Be, you know,
and we'll be like, no, we're done. It can't happen. Or something. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the list of the list of video game movies that have worked is very, very small. And, you know,
we did a podcast about it a while ago, and basically, like, it's always something that I always like revisiting because there's always, like, different other people's opinions and things to discuss. But we just sat there going, yeah, this one wasn't very good. This one wasn't very good. And then this one wasn't very good. No, yeah, that one wasn't too bad. No, that one sucked. And then as we got to sort of, you know, more recent ones, it's like, yeah, that was made by Uwe Boll. No, that doesn't count. No, Uwe Boll. No, that was Uwe Boll. Nah. And it's like, this isn't working out too well.
But, no, I mean, they're still trying. Like, as games, I think the problem is the games of the 80s had very little story. I mean, it was like Rescue the Princess, Save the World. And, like, the main characters didn't talk because they wanted the player to associate more with the character, and they felt like if they gave the character a voice that didn't sound like the player's, then like they wouldn't feel part of the main character. And it was, you know, the storylines are very linear, very little character development. Nowadays, you know, you have CGI and 30-minute cutscenes where it's almost like you're watching a movie before your game even starts. And, you know, maybe they'll find more success recently, but that still hasn't been the case.
Yeah, I mean, my friend, when we, like, went out the other week to see a movie, and we were just talking about, like, games, and they were like, oh, yeah, I want to play L.A. Noire. But then my friend's like, no, I'm, like, the pretentious gamer, and I don't actually play the game. I just want to sit and watch the movie. And I'm like, well, I'm sure you'll get a lot of that with this new game.
Well, see, it's funny, L.A. Noire is a game where you can skip the action sequences and just watch the movie.
And he just wants to watch the movie.
Yeah,
he just
wants to play the game.
See, I'm the kind of gamer that I rely a lot more on the nostalgic factor to work for me. Or like, I normally buy games of a franchise that I've played for a very long time. Like, for instance, if there's a new Super Mario Brothers game, it's like totally going to be purchased day one. Whereas, like, something like Red Dead Redemption, which I own, I'll be like, oh, I'll wait on it a while, like, see what the reviews are, stuff like that. And those kind of games I actually find a little bit harder to get into. I don't know why. It just might be the fact that, like, I'm not familiar with the character, whereas, like, if I pick up a Legend of Zelda game, like, well, I know what I'm doing, I know the whole, like, idea, right. You know. So whereas Super Mario Brothers are pretty much, like, my – and that's the thing. I guess I just don't really require a lot of exposition. I was like, all right – so, like, for a new Super Mario Brothers Wii, it's, like, it's Peach's birthday. She gets kidnapped because it's her birthday. Worst birthday ever. And now we have to go save her. Although, on that factor, and Harry has actually spoke to me about this, Nintendo's becoming so lazy with their literal character development is that the reason they made two Toads instead of using, like, oh, I don't know, maybe making like Wario or Waluigi just to kind of like, you know, make it different is because the Toads have the same body shape as Mario. So basically they just made a model and then just reused it twice, or they made it technically three times.
Mm. Yeah, this is Player 3 and Player 4.
It's like the laziness of Mortal Kombat where they just do like a color switch on their characters and give them another name.
So yeah, like, I feel like if Super Mario Brothers 2 had never happened, where Luigi was, like, taller than Mario and, like, kind of had his own distinct jumping style, if that game had never happened, like, I feel like Luigi would just be Mario's identical twin brother. Like, he would have never had a distinct, like, look.
Right.
Yeah, and it's because of that, Luigi fucking rules Mario.
Which, that game itself was based on a Japanese game, so it was like, that wasn't even an original game. It was just more laziness.
Hmm. But I'm not complaining because it works for me.
Yeah, it works.
I think for another Mario game, like, how about, like, I keep saying, like, that the princess not get kidnapped for once. Like, think of something new. Wait. Maybe kidnap Mario and then...
They did that. There was a DS game called Princess... I can't remember the name.
Yeah, but you don't have the princess rescuing everyone. You kidnap... How about Mario kidnaps... no, instead of Mario getting kidnapped, what about Mario kidnapping Bowser? And, like, you have to be you have to be the Koopas to rescue him and the Goombas.
Yeah, I mean, see,
I'm trying to think of something that's not been done, because as soon as I said that, I'm like, wait, that's been done, and then wait, that's been done
too. Like, Bowser was a good guy. I never really played through that game, but I know he was a good guy. Even in the Mario RPGs, you get to control. More like the Goombas and the Koopa Troopas, but not a straight up like although Bowser's inside story, yet again, do get to control him.
I've got it.
At the same time, it's not a straight up like 100% I'm Bowser, kind of like almost like a take on Donkey Kong Jr. Whereas, you know, Mario is the enemy.
No,
and you have to save your dad.
I've got the perfect game. It's called the Bowser Tears. And you train to be a minion of Bowser. Done.
Oh, man. Done. But Logan, you brought up a good point earlier that I wanted to ask you about, like, in taking risks with games and how you kind of like the games that have established properties and you're familiar with them and you don't need as much, like, exposition. Do you feel like movies are kind of that same way too? Like where we're getting all the sequels and reboots and stuff. Like, do you feel like the public is kind of in that same mindset where they don't want to try new properties so much, and it's like, you know, sequelitis?
Yeah, but at the same time, there's always a nice, like, I mean, for instance, I don't own a PlayStation. This is kind of going back to the video games, but I'm just trying to prove my point, is I don't own a PlayStation 3, but I'd love to play Little Big Planet. And maybe it just speaks more to me because it's like a creative, it's more of like a creative game. Like, it's something that's different, and it's, you know, and everyone who I've heard has it, loves it. But going back to that matter, like, if we were to kind of run a parallel line of, okay, well, Super Mario Brothers, we know the story, you know, and it works well because it's successful because it's very bare bones in the story, but it's very big on the action and fun. Whereas Hollywood is kind of relying on all these other old ideas, either, you know, remaking them or rebooting them because they know they'll work and they'll put butts in the seats. But at the same time, there's a lot of a lot to gain from being experimental, and just kind of seeing movies like that or games like that every once in a while are good, because as much as I love Super Mario Brothers, as much as I love Donkey Kong, Zelda, and all those franchises that I grew up with that I love so much, there's definitely going to be games or movies that will come out and be like, well, let me see what that's like. Because everything now is comic books, books, you know, as far as movies go, comic books, books, remakes, reboots, whatever. And the public's eventually going to get tired of it because you always need that one creative idea, that one different kind of film. And I'm trying to think of something recently that I saw that I was just like, that's so different. But, I mean, even now, everything's based on something else. And as much as I do love the franchises that, you know, I'm familiar with and I know very well, you know, at the same time, there's also, you could kind of, with video games, you can also take a simple idea and you can use it for something else. Like, for instance, on, you know, the Xbox 360, you know, there's a game called Super Meat Boy, which is basically this 2D platformer where you're just this little wad of meat and you're just jumping around. And, or like Limbo. Like, Limbo was kind of a take on a 2D atmosphere, which is like a Super Mario Brothers, but it just kind of changed up the atmosphere, and it used, like, really just, like music that was just, like, really moody, and it just completely changed everything. So you could take an idea, with video games, you could take an idea, and you could definitely change it up to suit a different type of gamer. Whereas movies, you know, it's kind of like, you kind of have to have either original, well, most movies now are very unoriginal, but at the same time, I don't even know if I'm answering your question. Because in the world of gaming, you... What?
I just laughed.
In the world of gaming, you have models that you can work with and kind of riff on or do, you know, different stuff with it. Or even you can do that within a game. Like, for instance, you know, Super Mario Galaxy 2, you had 2D elements, you had 3D elements. The 2D was going back to its original, you know, format. And the 3D elements were more this generation. I think people are going to buy the games that, you know, make them, that they're familiar with, but at the same time, the only real way that gaming is going to survive is if there's always something different there. And as much as, like for instance, I'm saying Red Dead Redemption because I love the hell out of the game, as much as it is Grand Theft Auto in the Old West, it's definitely a lot, like, the characters are different and everything else, the storyline's different. It's still using the same basic foundation, but it also is different because it has a new character, he's got a new plot line, it's Tale of Redemption, which, you know, I'm a sucker for. But then at the same time, like, you know, Marvel vs. Capcom 3, we bought it because, you know, we love 2 so much, but at the same time, I would still say that I'd play 2 over 3 any day of the week, but then again, you know, there's multiple, like, characters that have the same features. The kind of the same thing goes with Super Smash Brothers. It's just like, how often, you know. And that's going back to the 30-hour record. It's like, really, I could play a fighting game for 30 hours. I could play a Legend of Zelda game for 30 hours, but it's like, I prefer more of the adventure.
Right.
So anyway, to probably not answer your question in any way, shape, or form, I apologize. But I think that the consumers of the world are going to definitely, like, if there was only like games based on franchises that we're familiar with, I think gaming would die a very early death, because there's always some but there's always people out there in the world that have these ideas and they want to put them into a game format. And really, those are the people that, you know, have to have their time to shine. But that's the thing. Like, when Nintendo came out, we're like, oh, we're having – there's a new Metroid, there's a new GoldenEye, there's a new Kid Icarus. It was like, okay, but where's the game that you're like – these are all franchises that we know and love, but where's the game that are like, oh, like, what is the – it's like fiercely typing.
No, we're like side talking.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I just was saying that I'm listening to you talk and I'm like nodding along and I'm like, wait, no one could see me nodding along.
I don't want to be beat, so I'm just going to wrap it up.
You're going to be beat.
So to just kind of put a capper on that whole thing, I think that there has to be original ideas in both forms of media, video games and film, in order for people to really enjoy that format, right. And hopefully, you know, there's always something in the pipeline that's just completely 100% different. I mean, for the record, like The Sims, when it came back, you know, out way back when, people were like, why the fuck would I want to play a game that I'd have to basically take care of a person? But it sold, you know, because it was a novel idea, because like everyone's like, well, why would you do this? Be like, well, why haven't you done this? Like, it's a novel idea. No one's ever tried it before. And it's, you know, people ate it up. And there was two sequels that came out, you know, just kind of like updating the graphics and the content. But, you know, it's there's always that $1 million idea that you're like, oh, that's just really going to work. And sometimes you kind of have to take risks. And for that record, both movies and video games should definitely do stuff like that for fans to be happy.
Yeah, like I can see definite comparisons between like the game industry and what's going on in movies nowadays. Where like a very novel idea, like you were talking about, is something like Portal. I think where, you know, it's a game based around you shoot an orange portal here on this wall, you shoot a blue portal on this wall, and you can go through them to get to the other side. And it's just like a whole game based around puzzles on that. And that's just so new. I mean, there are puzzle games, but nobody's ever done anything like that and kind of incorporated that in a 3D space. So, you know, you see ideas like that. And what was sad was the makers of the game had to kind of like team up with like a bigger company and join with the release of Half-Life in order for them to be released publicly and in order for them to even be thought of. I mean, all these games kind of come out that are new and different, and people kind of ignore them because they're not Call of Duty, they're not Madden, they're not Mario. So, like, I feel like that happens in movies sometimes, where someone will have a very original idea for a film, and the public will kind of ignore it, or it won't see a release in as many theaters because it's not, either it's not put out by a major studio, or, you know, it's just not Pirates of the Caribbean 4 or Transformers 3 or Spider-Man 4, you know. That was the comparison I was thinking of. But yeah, I mean, there are two different audiences. There are two different expectations going into each thing. So.
And I guess I can't even remember what the hell the question was in the first place. But I mean, if I just will say my piece on how I feel about like the games and the films. But with games, I always go back to the originals. That's why I still play my Nintendo and whatnot, because they're the game. I guess I grew up with them, and that's what I know. And when I try to do something new, like, I don't know, I don't generally take too many risks. I don't really know if I'm going to like them, and when I do, I might not like them, and then I regret buying them. Or in this, with a movie, like, oh, there's a remake of this. Well, no, I don't want to see the remake. I want to go back to the original because that's what I know. That's what I like. And when I do give a remake a chance, it usually ends up sucking. And a lot of the cases, because I'm making a comparison, or if there's a remake of something I haven't seen, I'll generally see it and still probably not really like it, and then see the original and end up saying, yeah, that was so much better. And I kind of feel that way about games in a way. But I guess, you know, when a game's successful, there's going to be another part to it. Same with a movie. And I guess that doesn't bother me too much unless they do it justice. And I guess, you know, in a way, like, you look at Mario, like, Mario, the first one was awesome. And, you know, the second one was, you know, based on something else. But then they did 3, and 3 was absolutely awesome. And then they did, like, Super Mario World, which was, you know, another really awesome game. And, you know, they sort of went along with doing awesome things like that, and then they sort of branched off and did a whole lot of other things. But I guess if you put Mario on something, I'll probably go to it without even thinking, because it's already something I'm familiar with. Whereas if they say, oh, here's this game called blah, 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 and I've never heard of it, I don't know. Will I like it? I don't know. It's a bit difficult. And I guess it's kind of like when I used to play wrestling, like No Mercy 64, on the Nintendo 64, and that was something I was really familiar with because I liked wrestling and I was playing the wrestling game. And then when they brought out the games on the Wii, I was like, oh yeah, I'm really excited to play this. And I had no idea what I was doing. The controls were so stupid and I couldn't do anything. And I'm like, I really want to play it, but it just doesn't really work for me, because I, you know, they had it right with No Mercy. Why did they change it? And this sort of almost frightened me away from a lot of new games, unless it was something like, you know, it's this Wii Bowling or Wii Sport Resort. Yeah, I'll play Wii Sport Resort over some other sporting game because I'm already familiar with how it works. I've already taught myself that game. So I guess I don't take too many risks when it comes to a game. Maybe I will see more films because I guess there's less of at least a financial investment if I'm going to go watch a movie over a game.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot less time involved, so I guess I'm more cautious with my games and I tend to stick with what I know. But there's probably a lot of games like I haven't played, I don't even know about, where I probably would like them if I just sort of gave them a chance. And that's my ramble.
I mean, I think there's a big debate on when the classic era of gaming ended, because you really, like, there was a, I mean, when you had the Nintendo and then you had Super NES, then they kind of, like, battled with the Genesis, and then, you know, you went to the 3D era of the Nintendo 64.
I guess it would be the 3D that sort of changed things. That's where I would say, but, I mean, you could almost argue and say,
if you ask the guys in the documentaries, they're going to tell you that it was when the Nintendo came out.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, like, you know, whereas
home consoles killed the arcades.
Exactly. They could say classic gaming was arcades. It's not, you know, home consoles. Or you could say, no, but this, you know, my Atari games, blah, 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 that's where it sort of finished. And then Nintendo went and did their other, I mean, you know, it's hard to say. Like, everyone would have some different ideas. Someone could say, oh, no, classic gaming, we're still classic gaming now. Because, like, you know, in 10 years, nobody's going to be playing Wii or Kinect or whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean?
My question is, will those games hold up as well? You know, like, I love going back and playing Super Mario Brothers. I love playing, you know, 2 and 3. I don't see, and Super Mario World, but I don't pick up, you know, Super Mario Sunshine and just play a couple levels. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, but that game also sucks.
Yeah, well, there's an idea gone bad, you know, that's where they change something a little too much. But, you know, I don't know if the modern games hold up as well and age as well as the classic ones did.
Yeah, I guess it would be the same, like, if you're a kid growing up with Wii, you know, you're going to have some massive, you know, this massive, like, game where it's, like, I don't know, some really awesome futuristic game, and then that kid's probably going to go back and be like, no, I want to play my Wii because it was awesome. That's like how we sort of are with Nintendo.
If you think about it,
go ahead.
I think we all cut each other off at some point.
Because we're all just like, blah, 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 blah.
I really think that the 80s were like the last great decade of, like, just toys. And I don't even want to, like, you know, call the NES a toy, but it was, like, you know, you played with your controller, with my joystick toys.
I mean, what? No, sorry.
The joystick's my penis? Sorry, listening to the Thorcast, I had to throw something.
I need a controller.
Anyway.
Preferably one I can ride.
Rumble Pack, baby. Rumble Pack.
Oh, gosh, the Rumble Pack. I'm going to get a Rumble Pack. I'm going to go buy one today. I mean, what? What? I didn't say that.
But no, like, I even think about, like, as much as the, we're talking about the 3D era of kind of like the ending of classic gaming began, I still hold the N64 in high regard, and I think a lot of other people do too, because I think that's, I think when games went to the CD format, I think that's when it started to really, you know, the classic era of game died, because like, I have such fond memories of GoldenEye and the original Super Smash Brothers, and I think that's, for me personally, that's when it started to end. The N64 died. And come on, Pokemon Snap.
I think, but it's a generational thing, you know, like Marcy was kind of saying. Yeah.
But yeah, I totally agree with her point, because like a lot of kids now, they have Xbox 360s, they have Wii's, they have TS's, they have
all these Wii's.
They have their Wii's, they play their Wii's.
They're going to go Wii!
The next one might be called Stream, so.
It's called a what?
It might be called a stream, the Nintendo Stream.
Stream. I'm going to go Wii a stream.
Don't cross them.
Was inappropriate.
Sorry, Logan.
No, it's fine. But like Marcy said, kind of like what I agree with is that I think it just goes by generation. Because this generation, but that's the thing. I mean, like the I will never hold the Wii in high regards as I will to even the Nintendo, and I never owned a Super NES, which I've called out on, but that's not my fault. It's my parents. They were horrible.
Yeah, blame your parents. I'm, like, my mom bought me my Super NES. Like, at that age, I couldn't have bought one myself because I was, like, you know, 7 years old or however old I was when it came out.
I'm actually, I actually remember having a dream one time where I was in a Toys R Us with my parents, and I remember the dream, the Super NES cost a penny. I was like, that's like top five, like, Logan dreams right there.
I remember, like, when my mom came home with this huge box and all of my face lit up. I'm like, oh, it's a new Nintendo. It's a Super Nintendo. Oh, my God.
And there's a reason that one of the best viral videos is that kid opening the Nintendo 64.
Oh, my God. I know. That was like me. I was the original kid, but we didn't have YouTube back then.
Bang on the box.
Yeah, there's a fond memory of me at 4 years old getting my Nintendo and opening it up and getting Super Mario Brothers and Donkey Kong. Like, there was...
Yeah, man.
There's just the nostalgia overload just hits you every time, and there's nothing going to be more classic than just sitting down, flipping on your Nintendo and playing Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, I mean... That's it for me. I mean, by the time Nintendo 64 came out, I could buy that myself. So it wasn't like somebody was bringing it home for me. I went out and bought it myself.
Yeah.
And like, but, you know, those feelings, like getting the Game Boy and, you know, somebody be like, oh, you know what? I bought this, like, Game Boy Pocket. It's green. But I don't know why I bought it. I'm just going to give it to you, Marcy. And that's how I got my Game Boy Pocket.
And that one was awesome. You know, like, that was, like, right before the Game Boy Color came out.
Yeah, it was just more compact, and the screen was a lot clearer. Except mine doesn't have batteries. I'm going to find batteries for it.
I know mine was missing the back. Mine was missing the back to it, so, like, I'd bring it with me to school, and, like, you really weren't supposed to play the Game Boys in school.
Oh, my gosh,
and
I remember.
I would, like, lean back in my chair, and it would fall out of my pocket, and, like, batteries would go flying everywhere, and, like, the teacher was so mad that, like, the teacher was so mad that there were, like, batteries and things flying everywhere that she didn't, like, even see that I had a Game Boy.
I'm holding my original Game Boy with Tetris, and I, like, played it the other day, and I, like, won Tetris.
Nice. Is that the one with the contrast? Or the pocket?
No, the old one, the original. Oh. Like, the big, it looks like a brick. And I,
it had the contrast, like, slider on the side where you had to, like...
And volume, and this dot matrix, and stereo sound.
See, the Game Boy contrast slider is now the 3D slider. The 3DS. That's how far we've come.
And you put both of them somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, and then, Harry, do you remember the Game Boy in Nintendo World that was, like... I think it was in the Gulf War...
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, burned, and, like, it was got wet, and it still plays. Like, that's just how, like they called it the brick for the reason, because it would never break.
Yeah, like, you've seen mine. Like, some of the screen came off, and I've got, like, tape.
Right.
On there, and the tape is like 10 years old and it hasn't come off.
And like nowadays, you drop your phone once and it's like broken. You know?
Yeah, like my old brick phone, I would drop that thing like 5 times a day and it would shatter into 1,000 pieces and I'd pick all the pieces up, put it back together, and it would still work. If I dropped my iPhone, goodbye iPhone.
Yeah.
They made things to last. The corner of my
butt. You, Logan, when you were bringing up like early gaming memories, you reminded me of my earliest gaming memory, which is I was playing NES Super Mario Brothers 2. And if you remember, that game starts with like an overworld, or like it's a room, and before you get to like the main enemies, like you have to go through a door. It's like this like green like floor and whatever. Like it's like this like little practice room.
Subspace Highway.
I was so afraid when I was little to, like, kill Mario, because, like, I thought I was really killing Mario, but I refused to go through the door. And I never left that practice room. I just, like, ran around and jumped and, like, ran from side to side, and, like, it was really sad. My dad was like, you're not playing the game right.
But that's the effect that these games had on us, because, like, when I was, I mean, even as a teenager, and I'm going to say this without regret, when I finished Super Mario 64, I was generally sad, because, like, wow, I'm done. Like, there's nothing left to do, and, like, and they have this, like, nice little music, and the credits are rolling, and they're showing you all the areas you went to, and you're like, but I don't want to be done.
Yeah, but then you just play it again.
Well, yeah, but it's just like that first time, you know, like, never you could go back and play it again, but like, it's never the same. It's like when you see a movie for the first time, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to go see it again. It's like, yeah, you pick up a new things, but it's never as good that second time. Unless it's like Scott Pilgrim, which I still, like, I'll watch every time.
Well, it's not like, it's not like when you, maybe I won't go into that. It's like, maybe it's not like the first time when you do it, because then you're like, oh, thank God, that's over. That was horrible.
Right, like gaming is sex in reverse.
Let's never talk about that again.
I'm gonna play Donkey Kong.
Yeah, so if you like do it now, then it's all awesome.
Right. And then even like with Twin Galaxy, I'm not Twin Galaxy. Why are you laughing?
I don't know.
You're all befuddled.
What even Chasing Ghosts showcased was the death of the arcade, which is, to this day, something that's not even that well, like, well, that much around anymore. Except for, like, your typical Dave & Buster's and your Boardwalks or whatever. That's pretty much, like, a dead place to go, like, at the arcade. I've never really seen any around here.
No, and, like, even the little, like, some diners and things would put, like, little shoot-em-up games or whatever outside their, while you were waiting. And I loved those things as a kid, and they're gone now. Replaced, I guess, by, home console games where you have HD televisions and people playing little, you know, 99-cent games on their iPhone. So, it's really sad because, I mean, they kind of, in Chasing Ghosts, they kind of attributed like the birth of Street Fighter and some of those like Tekken, those Mortal Kombat type games as the death, like as starting the death of the arcade era and like attracting the gangs and things. And I tend to disagree with that. Like I think it came later. I loved going to the arcade and playing Marvel vs. Capcom and stuff because you played people in the arcade, other kids that you didn't know. And, like, this was before online, you know? I think, if anything, online gaming is what killed the arcades because then you didn't have that sense of competition. So, I mean, I fondly remember arcades in the 90s, but not so much anymore.
No. I mean, even when I went to Dave & Buster's a couple weekends ago, and even just seeing the actual, like, physical arcades, and I'm talking about, like, you know, stuff that would push the buttons, and, like, there would be a screen. Most of the games now are, like, either, like skill, like, crane or, like, skee-ball, which, don't get me wrong, I'm not, like, against skee-ball. But most of the games are pretty much just, like a game of chance. So that kind of made me upset. But, you know, and then there's actually there's a place near my beach house that actually still has the Simpsons arcade game, and I will go seek it out every summer when it opens just to play that game. So, yeah. I mean, arcades hold a lot of, and I even remember, like, when I went to Wagner, where Harry went as well, our college, where they actually, before they changed over the eating area, they actually used to have a Marvel vs. Capcom 2 arcade machine, which I would play nonstop.
I only heard stories of it because it was gone by the time I got there. But yeah, I mean, I think online gaming and HD gaming is what killed the arcades. I really do. And it's sad because there was, you know, that was an experience in itself.
Yeah. Crosses himself, rest in peace.
Now that we've, I think, saddened everything up. no. I guess we'll probably sort of wrap it up now, I guess. Because I think we've had a pretty lengthy, awesome discussions podcast that hopefully everybody will enjoy listening to. And we will have to do it again sometime. Or do a continuation. Or maybe we'll we'll do something awesome. So
if anyone's interested, there's going to be a gaming podcast coming up very soon.
So from all of us who we've all been complete, gaming nutcases, like the ones showcased in the movies that we discussed earlier, I will see you again next time.
Do the Mario swing your arms from side to side. Come on, it's time to go. Do the Mario. Take one step and then again. Let's do the Mario all together now. You got it. It's the Mario. Do the Mario. Swing your arms from side to side. Come on, it's time to go. Do the Mario. Take one step and then again. Let's do the Mario all together now. Come on now, just.